Christmas every day. Ah, 3 o'clock growl. Thank you very much, Chris Morales. Of course, Dodgers game number three tonight. I am about a mile and a half from the stadium right now. And as soon as we get done with Aldin Gonzalez in about 45 minutes, I will leave and walk over to the game. It's a Dodger crowd. I can tell you that much. There are cheers of "Let's go Dodgers." You can hear it at critical moments in the game. So the Dodgers have a limited home field advantage. They have more fans certainly than the Tampa Rays have at those games. So there's a little home field advantage. Plus they've now played 15 games there this year. So they've gotten comfortable. They know the park, although tonight the roof will be closed, which is generally favorable for the pitchers.
And you think on paper, at least, the Rays have the edge tonight.
Charlie Morton is just a beast, man. He's got a chance to extend an unbelievable streak tonight. He can become the second pitcher to win each of his first six starts with a single team in the playoffs, joining Lefty Gomez, who did it for the Yankees in 1932. So Charlie Morton has got six consecutive starts allowing one or fewer runs in the playoffs, and a 0.70 ERA through five starts with the Rays, lowest since earned runs became official. So, yeah, he's a beast. He's a monster. His breaking ball, and he will come at you with that curveball over and over and over again. He beat us handily when he was with the Houston Astros just 3 years ago. 3 years ago? Is that possible? Yeah, 3 years ago. And I love Walker Buehler. Walker Buehler is going to go out there and throw a good game. I think we're going to get to the fifth inning and we're going to be scoreless. And then it comes down to the bullpens. That's the way I think tonight plays out.
My response to all of that is one word.
Cake. Yeah, I knew it was cake.
Yeah. And I'm not worried. Walker Buehler, he's been waiting for this all year. I mean, he had blisters, he had problems. He didn't get to start game one. I think that he would have thought at the start of the season he would be the game one starter in the World Series. I think this is Walker Buehler's coming out party tonight. You'll see.
I want to see again, it's going to come down to bullpens. And, I said at the beginning of the series, John, I give the Rays a slight advantage in terms of their bullpen. We've seen now all these guys, Nick Anderson and Peter Fairbanks and Diego Castillo. We saw Aaron Loop, who's a very tough on lefties. We saw all those guys the other night. We did get to nick them up a little bit, and it helps to see them. It helps. The more times you face a guy, the more likely you are to figure him out. And so it was good to get those relievers into game two. They're going to be necessary tonight, and the Dodgers will be able to see them for a second time.
I'll be anxious to see who's the first pitcher out of the bullpen tonight, do you think?
For us?
Yeah.
Blake Treinen.
Hmm.
And by the way, it depends. Are there runners on? Because that makes a difference. Blake Treinen's liable to get you a double play ball because he throws the hard sinker. You know, he would be good in a spot, particularly with a runner on first. I think you could also play, you could also go with Brisdar Graterol. That would be the other guy that I would think could be first out of the bullpen. And I'm not as in love with Brisdar Graterol yet. Everybody else is.
What are you talking about? He throws 100 miles an hour and he's 29 years old.
And he only strikes out five per nine. He pitches to contact an awful lot. But I think Joe Kelly's been good. Pedro Baez can be good. He can be good in a situation. I think Victor Gonzalez has been really good. But in the end, it's going to be Treinen, Graterol, and Kenley Jansen. Kenley Jansen, close game tonight. Going to finish it out. Big save for Kenley Jansen.
If it's a close game tonight, I don't want to see Kenley Jansen.
Get out of here. Did you not see him in his last appearance?
Yeah, I saw him the one before that, too. Leave Graterol in.
His cutter was low 90s, John. His cutter was low 90s, and he's had experience closing games.
He's been a great part of Dodger history, but so have a lot of guys who no longer pitch for us. The one thing that I'll say is whoever pitches the eighth inning, if the eighth inning goes well, I would not necessarily just change pitchers in the ninth for the sake of changing. A lot of managers do that. I think that if the guy who pitches the eighth hasn't gone through the lineup, in other words, they're not seeing him for the second time.
Right.
I just leave him in. If it's Graterol, if it's Joe Kelly, if whoever it is, leave him in.
I want to go to Kenley.
What?
I think Kenley's stuff in his last appearance was excellent. he looked like the Kenley of old. I want him on the mound in a save situation. I mean, there are going to be people that disagree with me, but I strongly.
Like me.
Yeah, like you.
But let's ask Anthony. Anthony Castrovince from MLB.com is nice enough to join us. He's covering the World Series. Anthony, if you're a Dodger fan, and Mason and I both are, do you want to see Kenley Jansen come into close or not?
I'm going to answer that question with a question. How rested are Blake Treinen and Bruisdar Gratterall in this situation?
They're fine. Assume everybody is rested and good to go.
Yeah, he'd probably be third in my pecking order behind those guys. What he did in the LCS was very encouraging, to say the least. And he needed that in a big way, and they're going to need him before the end of this series. But he would not be my first choice.
But in what situation? If you're not going to use him in a closing situation, what situation are you willing to use Kenley Jansen in?
You can send him up to the stands and have him autograph freebies and throw
you,
him to the
you've
Dodger
gone
fans.
Way you've gone way too south on Kenley. You've over-adjusted.
It's because
your
Anthony, here's why. Every time that dude comes into a game, my blood pressure goes up. Every single time. And it could be like, I'm not kidding. If it's like 7-3, I'm nervous. If we're ahead by 4, it's not even a save situation, and I'm nervous. He's clearly not the guy he was 2 years ago. And because he had one or two good outings means he's due for a bad one. That's who he is now.
No, just look at the stuff. You got to look at the stuff. The outcome isn't necessarily the most important thing. It's the stuff. He had great stuff when he went out there in his last performance. That was vintage Kenley stuff. That was low 90s cutter Kenley Jansen.
By the way, Anthony, if this thing does go to the bullpens, if we're having this debate about who we want to see, Gratterall or Kelly or Jansen, on paper at least, do you think that the Rays have an advantage in bullpen?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, they certainly had it in game two. With those, you know, the benefit of getting routed in game one was they had all their best arms, you know, readily available in game two, didn't use them in game one. And just, yeah, over the overall complexion of the series, I mean, the Rays go 4 or 5 deep in guys that I would trust to finish off a game. Whereas the Dodgers, it's a little more dicey. And again, I mean, this series, we're going to see all of it. We're going to see everybody you got because, starters just don't go that deep anymore. And Dave Roberts and Kevin Cash have particularly aggressive hooks with their starters for the most part. So you're not going to, nobody's hiding anybody here. So we're going to see Kenley. And that's just unavoidable. But I will say, and again, he wouldn't be my first choice, but his season was pretty ragged. It was pretty inconsistent. And his fastball velocity was down, his cutter velocity. But we have the StatCast stuff that shows that he did have some poor batted ball luck, the hard hit percentage, et cetera. So, what we saw the other day wasn't necessarily like some big fluke. It's just, is it repeatable moving forward in the series? We shall see, and we will see.
Yeah, we are definitely going to find out. How do you, by the way, you mentioned the saves and who comes in last. The Rays had 12 different pitchers record saves this year. They just don't have a traditional closer model, and any of those guys could be the last guy on the mound. What do you think of tonight's pitching matchup, Charlie Morton and Walker Buehler?
It's a good one. It's two guys with a lot of postseason pedigree, and Morton, even just in his Rays career, has been fantastic on this stage. And Buehler is obviously fighting through a blister issue that's kind of affected his pitch mix a bit, but he certainly hung tough with it in the LCS round in game six. So, I don't have a prediction for tonight, except that I think, this is a very important swing game in the series. I mean, the math just says that. If you win in a 1-1 tie and you win game three, you win the series almost 70% of the time. So I think it's a lot of fun to have just a traditionally really good starting pitching matchup in this third game at a time when, the starting pitching options get a little thin, even for a great team with all the money in the world, all the depth in the world. Even the Dodgers are scrambling for starting pitching innings right now. So it's nice to have, this legitimate pitching matchup for game three.
We're talking to Anthony Castrovince, who covers baseball for MLB.com. Anthony, there's a lot of, if you do deep dives into numbers, you can kind of tell any story you want. But they're going to close. You mentioned the ERAs of the starting pitchers. They've both been really, really low. They're going to close the roof during the season. Statistics indicated that when the roof is closed, the ball tends to stay in the park and the score comes right down a little bit. Bill Miller, the crew chief for all these World Series games, traditionally has a little bit bigger of I'll call it a more generous strike zone. Does all of that add up to low scoring tonight, or is that just guys trying to spin numbers to tell a story that's not really there?
Oh, all of that points to low scoring, which means we'll have a 12-10 game, you know, because that's
right.
How that works. Exactly.
But this ballpark is no joke in terms of how it plays with that roof closed, and we saw it in the regular season. It was the hardest park to hit a home run in. It's also proven in this postseason to be a good park for robberies of home runs because it is deep, and then you got the 8-foot wall that outfielders, especially Mookie Betts, can scale. So we've seen a lot of great defensive plays in this ballpark too. But yeah, now that the roof is closed, I think it'll play more towards what we saw in the regular season versus what we saw in the last couple rounds, you know, where the ball has been flying out of there more, you know, that we're more like we're accustomed to seeing. I think we're going to see Globe Life Field as designed, for better or worse. It's very much a pitcher's park.
Anthony, as you look at the way the Dodgers are handling their starting pitching, obviously Buehler tonight, Urias tomorrow, then Sunday is Kershaw. Game six, and I'm expecting a game six to take place. Game six, right now the Dodgers don't have a named starter, and playing with fire, a bullpen game is like playing with fire. I've suggested that Alex Wood might be an interesting play in that spot. Do you have any sense of who might start a game six for the Dodgers?
I feel like Alex Wood might – I don't know what they're thinking because they have not revealed that, but I think that makes more sense than, you know, trying this hybrid model that they went with in game two. I mean, I just see two young kids who really did a great deal for the Dodgers this year in May and Gonsolin, and whether they're out of gas or just, you know, the moment, the stage is catching up to them, I don't know. But, you know, they haven't had it in this postseason. Combined, they have an ERA north of 7, you know, in the regular season it was like 2.3 or something combined. So, there could be value. I mean, Wood would be a wild card and a risk too, just because of it hasn't been used much, you know? So that's what I'm saying. I mean, they're kind of in this weird spot where they are kind of, scrambling for those outs. I still think they're going to win the series. I still think they're the favorite to win the series, but game two was certainly proof that, you know, in the right matchup, the Rays can take you down because they do have such a deep pitching staff.
Anthony Castrovince from MLB.com is with us. Anthony, in game one, Kershaw pitched very carefully to Randy Arozarena, walked him in the first inning, struck him out later in the game. But the book on the Rays was nobody else besides Arozarena is going to hurt you. The rest of the Rays hit under 200 in that series against the Astros. After what happened in game two, do you throw that scouting report out because some of those other bats woke up? Or can you go back to that? Pitch Arozarena carefully and let everybody else swing away?
I would still be inclined to stick with that approach because, you know, it is one game out of however many they've played. I've lost track in this postseason. But, you know, and they've had a couple, you know, explosions offensively in this postseason. But for the most part, they have been very Randy Arozarena oriented, which is, you know, a guy that most of the world had never heard of a month ago. And now he's obviously the focal point of the AL pennant winner. So that's credit to him. But not a great credit to them where, you know, their lineup has generally struggled. I think they have a 290 or so on base percentage going into game two. So game two is a huge step forward for them offensively. But the matchup certainly played into that, you know. And again, I mean, what they were facing there with the Dodgers trying to bullpen their way through that game just blew up on them. So I'll be curious to see if the Rays can do what they did in game two against, a legitimate rested starter in Walker Buehler.
Anthony, last thing for you. Fill in the blank. Dodgers in blank.
I said Dodgers in six going in, and I'll just stick with that. You know, I think that they're both really good teams. They both can mix and match so well. They have so many options, you know, on their bench, their bullpen, et cetera. And even though the Dodgers were caught short in that game too from a pitching perspective, I just think they're so far and away better offensively that, you know, over the course of this series, I think that's going to play out. You know, I think they're going to be able to take down the Rays in six.
All right. Hey, listen, Anthony Castrovince, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it a lot, man.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. Coming up next, Lindsay has made up a little game about game three of the World Series. That's coming up next for you. Bottom of the hour is Game of Games. And still to come, Alden Gonzalez from ESPN is going to join us.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin. And the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, so Lindsay, as we get ready for Game 3 of the World Series
at Globe Life Stadium.
Before
you go to this bit, let me dump some breaking news in here.
Okay, do it.
Adam Schefter is reporting that Antonio Brown and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are now working towards an agreement. Both sides trying to get it done. There are steps to be taken on this visit, and Seattle is still in the mix, but the Buccaneers have emerged as the favorites. So it'd be Antonio Brown and Tom Brady again in Tampa.
But don't they have too many wide receivers down there now?
Yeah, but they're hurt. A lot of those guys are hurt.
Oh, yeah, they are injured. You're right. You're right. Wow, Tampa Bay getting in the mix. That's interesting. All right, so Lindsay's put together some statements about tonight's game, and then we're going to react to them with either fact or fiction. Lindsay, what do you got?
All right, first one.
Fiction.
The Dodgers will fail to score a run off Charlie Morton in Game 3 tonight.
I'll go first. Fiction. Charlie Morton's due to get rocked. I think that Charlie Morton's going to pitch 5 innings. He's going to give up in those 5 innings. He's going to give up at least 2 runs, maybe 3. And the Dodgers break down the myth that is Charlie Morton.
Lindsay, I say Charlie Morton is going to hold the Dodgers scoreless for 5 innings tonight.
Oh, I think it's a fact.
I think Walker Buehler is going to hold Tampa scoreless for 5 innings. I think tonight is a pitcher's duel. It feels like an old-fashioned pitcher's duel, even though everybody's only going 5 innings. And I think that the game will be decided with the bullpens later on in the game. So, yeah, I think it's a fact. I think Dodgers will not score on Charlie Morton.
All right, next one.
Fact or fiction?
Nice.
Randy Rosarena will finally homer for the Rays in Game 3 tonight.
Fiction. They're pitching around him. They actually intentionally walked him last in Game 2. They are not going to let Rosarena beat them.
He hasn't shown me anything yet. I mean, I know I watched some of the other playoff games when he was really good, but the Dodgers are treating him very, very carefully. I also say fiction.
It's actually been 12 plate appearances, John, since ALCS MVP Randy Rosarena hit a home run. So it's been a while. You could argue that he's due, or you could argue that he's cold. All right, next one.
Fact or fiction?
Walker Buehler will give the Dodgers at least 5 innings in Game 3 tonight.
Fact.
Yeah, that's a fact. He's definitely going to give them 5 innings. He's on regular rest. He seems to have the blister thing under control. I think he's going to shut down that Tampa lineup and give us 5 clean innings.
Yep. I think that's going to be – I think by the end of the 5th inning, the Dodgers are going to be ahead 2-0.
All right, next one.
Fact or fiction?
Tonight, if the Dodgers are in a save situation heading into the 9th, Kenley Jansen will get the ball to close it out.
Fiction!
Fact. 1,000,000% fact. Kenley Jansen is going to be in a save situation tonight.
And what happens when he's put in that situation?
Well, I don't know. He's 11 of 13 in save opportunities this year, so I'd say our odds are pretty good.
Jorge, I want you to pull this portion of the tape of the disc, because if they no, I don't think Dave Roberts is going to play with fire. I think he'll go with whoever the hot hand is. Could be Gratterall, could be Joe Kelly. No Kenley Jansen. If it's the situation that you set up, Lindsay, if it's a tight game late, I think he's going to somebody else.
All right, last one here.
Or fiction.
The Dodgers will win Game 3 tonight.
Fact.
That's a fact. Yeah, I think we win Game 3. It's a huge swing game. They need to win this. Our last guest said, Anthony Cantrovitz, or what was his name? Cantrovitz?
Castor Vince.
What he said, I think, is absolutely right. This is a swing game. The numbers heavily favor you if you win game three in a 1-1 tie. So, yeah, I think it's an important game for the Dodgers to win, and I think they will. John?
Well, yeah, no, I've picked the Dodgers all along. I put $10,000 in mythical money.
Okay, so yeah, John's already fact.
All right. All right. That's it for Fact or Fiction.
Cool. Appreciate that. All right. Now, coming up right now, Dave Roberts has just spoken over at Globe Life Field, and we're going to pick up some of his comments. This is just from over at the stadium.
Dave, Fran, Charles, and Dan, please, Zach, we appreciate you spending a little time with us. What do you expect from Walker Buehler, your starter tonight, after he was very sharp in Game 6 of the NLCS?
Yeah, he was pretty good, wasn't he? I like my guy. I think Walker, he's different than a lot of pitchers as far as on his start day. He's jovial, kind of joking around with guys, but you know, when he takes them out, it's going to come out hot. He's going to make pitches. It's going to be hard. He's just really smart, really competitive, and just loves this moment.
Hey, Dave, it's Dan. I'm not sure you got into this managing thing. You're stretched to 7 games to get to the World Series, and now you find yourself at a nail-biter again. But I made this statement. I think you guys have won this division 8 consecutive years. But I feel like watching this edition of your Dodger team, this team has the biggest heart, gets knocked down. They find a way to get back up. Accurate statement?
Very accurate, Danny. I love our guys. You know, it's a grinder group. It's a very talented group, obviously. Certainly, there's been a lot of talk about Mookie's done to our club, culture, on the field, off the field. And you can just see from the demeanor, you know, guys are on the top step and cheering and playing hard defense. We run the bases well. We take good at-bats, and we can pitch. So really, really talented team, and just love each every one of these guys.
Dave, what's impressed you most about Corey Seager? Because, you know, a couple years back, he had the Tommy John surgery, and then when he was on the shelf for that, he also had hip surgery, and this is a guy who was the NL Rookie of the Year back in 2016. And quite honestly, you know, there were many people who kind of gave up on him returning to superstar form, but he certainly has shown us that. What impresses you most about Corey?
Yeah, you know, we here in Los Angeles definitely didn't sleep on Corey. I think that he's healthy. He's playing fantastic defense, and that shouldn't be understated. But I think offensively, he's just staying in the strike zone. I mean, this guy really can cover the strike zone with anything left-handed, right-handed. But in this postseason, he's done a good job as I've ever seen him. Really control the strike zone, take walks when he needed. And if they make a mistake, he's going to slug you.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, so there is Dave Roberts from a short time ago over at Globe Life Field. That's courtesy of MLB Network. And so Dave feels like he's going to get a great performance from Walker Buehler. And, of course, Corey Seager, who they damn near traded this offseason, has become probably their second biggest impact hitter.
Yeah, and it's going to be – we had Buster Olney on our show yesterday, and Buster made a really good point. I was thinking that Corey Seager, and based on his performance this year, had solidified himself to be the Dodgers shortstop for the next 10 years, but he's a Scott Boras client, and Boras always takes his clients to free agency. So we have Corey Seager this year, and then we have him next year, and after that, that could be it. So, admire Corey Seager while we have him. It could be interesting.
Now, his point, though, was that it becomes a really big shortstop class. So a guy like Trevor Story is available. A guy like Francisco Lindor is available. All these shortstops come available at the same time.
Yeah,
I think Buster's point was the Dodgers will get one of them. It may not be Seager, but they will get one of those shortstops. All right, coming up next for you, we're going to do Game of Games. John's game today. John is leading in the month of October. He's got 7. Lindsay's got 4. I've got 4. Jorge has 3. John, you want to describe the game? Give us a sneak preview.
It has something to do with a very famous Los Angeles athlete with Dodger ties.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay, that's coming up next for you. And then Alden Gonzalez is going to join us from ESPN. He's covering the World Series as well. We are all over the World Series for you. I'm here in Arlington. I'll be in the park tonight for Game 3 of the World Series. It'll be Walker Buehler versus Charlie Morton, as we've been talking about. And don't forget tonight, you can hear the game right here on 710 ESPN. Dan Schulman, Chris Singleton, Jess Mendoza, and Buster Olney on the call. That's at 5 o'clock. And then right after our ESPN Network pregame, our network postgame. Travis Rogers will do a postgame show, and I'll check in with Trav tonight. So it's a big night here. World Series Game 3. No need to touch the dial. It's all happening right here. Mesa and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Juego de Juegos, Mesa and Ireland, 710 ESPN. It is John's game today. Ireland leads the month of October. Lindsay and I are two back, and Jorge is three back. I'm sorry, he's four back. John, what's the game today?
Okay, so you guys know that Magic Johnson, the NBA Hall of Famer for the Lakers, is also a part owner of the Dodgers.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if you guys follow Magic on Twitter. He has over 5 million Twitter followers.
I love a good generic tweet.
Okay, so I was just going to say, Magic on Twitter is very, for lack of a better word,
obvious.
Earnest.
Yeah.
He's insanely positive on a medium that is usually ugly and mean.
And he also says things that everybody already knows.
Correct. So I have 7 tweets. Some of these are actual Magic tweets, and some I made up. You guys just tell me real or fake. Okay, here we go.
Such a game. Okay.
All right. Tweet number one. I'm so excited to announce my first children's book, Bronco and Friends, A Party to Remember. It's a sweet story about animals with different challenges and abilities based on my pup, Bronco. Lindsay, is that a real Magic Johnson tweet or not?
I'm going to say it's not.
It's not. Jorge?
I'm going to say no.
You're going no. Mace?
I am also going to go no.
You guys were all smart to stay away. That is a tweet from Tim Tebow.
Oh!
Also, who is very earnest and smart, but you guys are all on the board. Okay. Jorge, this one goes to you. I don't know why anybody would ever, all caps, move out of Los Angeles, exclamation point. It's the greatest city in the world with the greatest people, 2 exclamation points. I would never, all caps, live anywhere else, parentheses, except the great state of Michigan, exclamation point. Jorge, is that real or fake?
I'm going to say real.
Okay. Mace, real or fake?
I'm on real. That sounds like him.
Okay, Lindsay, real or fake?
I think it's real, too.
All three of you, I completely fooled you. I completely made that up. I thought that sounded like something he might
do. That definitely did.
All right, Mace.
Yes.
This one to you.
Okay.
I can't believe 6-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady lost track of downs in their 2019 loss to the Bears. Is that real or fake?
I'm going to say that's real.
All right, Lindsay.
I'm going to say fake.
George, break the tie.
No, I'm going with real.
It is real. Magic actually did tweet that after the Bucks-Bears game.
Highly critical of Tom Brady.
All right. Lindsay, this one back to you. Incredible LA Times writer Brad Turner wrote a fantastic article on my friendship and relationship with Laker VP and GM Rob Pelinka. I just want to personally thank him. This piece is a must read! Exclamation point. Real or fake, Lindsay?
I'm going to say real.
Jorge?
I'm going to say real.
Mace?
I'm also going real.
100% real. Yeah, Brad did write a piece about Magic and Rob, and Magic thinks you should read it. All right. Mace, 3. Jorge, 3. Lindsay, 2. This one to Jorge. I just tried the new Starbucks cold brew with essential vitamins! Exclamation point. Best drink ever! 2 exclamation points. Try one today! 3 exclamation points. Jorge, real or fake?
Fake. Totally fake.
You think it's fake? Okay, Mace.
I know he used to own Starbucks. He probably still does somewhere. I'm going to say that's fake, though.
Okay, Lindsay.
I'm going to say real.
Lindsay, you should have gone with the boys. I completely made that one up.
That sounds like a tweet that could have come from Starbucks itself.
Right. Okay, so Jorge, 4, Mason, 4, Lindsay, 2. All right, this next one, Mace, this goes to you.
Yep.
I want to give some love to the Miami Heat for coming out and playing their hearts out, even in defeat. Is that real or fake, mate?
God, that so sounds like, man. I'm going to go that's real.
All right, Lindsay.
I'm going to say fake.
Okay, Jorge.
I'm going with real, too.
Once again, the boys have it. It was a real tweet from Magic Johnson.
That is such a Magic tweet.
Okay, so now Lindsay is out of it.
Yep.
It is a tie between Jorge and Mace.
You're going down, Jorge.
If not, I have a tiebreaker. Okay, Jorge, this one's going to you. Uncle Bud's topical pain relief keeps my knees going daily after my morning workout! Discover all of the Uncle Bud's hemp products at UncleBud'sHemp.com. Jorge, is that real or fake?
Oh, man. Just going to go real.
Okay, Mace, do you agree or disagree?
I'm going fake.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner, and that winner is Jorge Briones.
Oh, no!
100% real. I don't know why, but that's in there.
Wow, so was that a paid tweet?
I don't know.
You've never seen him advertise that? I feel like those are all over Twitter, those videos of him rubbing on the Uncle Bud's hemp cream.
You've
never seen those?
Nope, yep, never seen him.
So maybe it is a paid tweet that he feels strongly about, but that is an actual tweet from Magic Johnson, and Jorge is your winner.
Yeah, he endorses it. I don't think it even is a paid tweet. He's one of their biggest sponsors or endorsers. Uncle Bud's hemp cream. Check it out.
Now you're advertising for him. All right, there you have it. There's your game of games. Coming up next for you, we will be joined by Alden Gonzalez from ESPN. He is covering the World Series, Dodgers beat writer. We will get his thoughts on the big game coming up tonight. I'll be there. It'll be here on 710 ESPN at 5 o'clock. We've got the World Series for you, and we'll talk to Alden about it next. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. We are gearing up for game 3 of the World Series. I'm in Arlington. I'll be at Globe Life Field tonight, where, by the way, the roof will be closed, which means that over the course of this season, they have scored on average 2 less runs per game than when the roof is open. So that lines up for what could be a great pitcher's duel between Charlie Morton and Walker Buehler for the Dodgers.
And actually, if you look at it this year, and this has only been the 1 year that it's open, during the regular season, if you use the Rangers numbers, it's three less runs. So
three with those, less runs. Wow.
With those pitchers, super low ERAs, the roof being closed, and Bill Miller, the umpire, is known. He's the crew chief for all these World Series games. We're in the same fraternity at UCLA. Bill is known to have a generous strike zone. Pitchers like him. So, we could be, and having said all this, it'll probably be like that game you saw in Houston where it's
it'll probably be 11 to 10.
12 or something.
13 to 12, joining us right now is ESPN Dodgers beat writer Alden Gonzalez. Alden, how you doing, man?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're excellent, Alden. And Walker, I have a good feeling about Walker Buehler tonight. Yeah. You know, at the beginning of the year, Alden, he was kind of regarded as ready to take over for Kershaw as the Dodgers' number one starter. He had blister problems late in the season, so he's kind of been demoted to number two behind Kershaw. What's your feeling about how Buehler's going to pitch tonight?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, these are always impossible to predict because every time I think somebody's going to pitch really well, he doesn't, and vice versa.
Sure.
But I will say that just watching Buehler in game 6 of the NLCS, it was maybe, I don't want to say the first time, but it was one of few times this year where it seemed like Walker was really sort of back to being the Walker Buehler that everybody expected. And it sort of makes sense too, because he was sort of not fully stretched out at the start of the season. He was behind all the other starters. It seemingly took him a while to just sort of get his rhythm, and then all of a sudden he's got those blisters, which have been bothering him really since, I think it's been like early to mid-September. So, and you saw early in the postseason, the Dodgers basically had to piggyback a starter every time he took the mound, whether it was Julio Urias, whether it was Dustin May. And for the first time in Game 6 of the NLCS, that wasn't the case. His stuff looked great. Keep in mind, I still remember this, but second inning, Game 6, bases loaded, nobody out. It seems like that game is beginning to unravel. The Dodgers season is beginning to unravel. And he throws nothing but fastball against the best fastball-hitting team in baseball to get out of that jam. And I think, to me, that was sort of an indication of maybe where he is, where his confidence in his stuff is. I think throwing to Austin Barnes is a benefit to him. He's really talked up sort of the relationship with Austin. They seem to work really well together. So, I mean, I think this is as good. This is probably the best version of Walker that we've seen all year. Now, how that translates into success against the Rays, we'll see. The Rays are also a very good fastball hitting team. They're also very good at hitting high velocities. So it's going to be interesting to see how he attacks them.
What's wrong with Dustin May?
I don't know. He was actually really good in that sort of two-inning hybrid bullpen role early on in the postseason, and lately he just hasn't been. I think with May and Gonsolin together, and I hate to lump them together, but they're both young guys. They're both guys who haven't really pitched in this stage much, and they're both guys who just haven't had sort of a conventional schedule, whether it's because it was the Dodgers' plans that way, which is the case with Dustin May, or whether it was just sort of unforeseen circumstances, like it was with Tony Gonsolin, who you'll remember when he started Game 2 of the NLCS, it was his first appearance in 17 days because the Dodgers swept the first two rounds. I think all of that has something to do with it. All of it at least has a little bit to do with it. The unconventional schedule, it's inexperienced this time of year, and who knows what else. But I think it's safe to say that at least one of them has to really get right, because it's hard, like especially the way the Dodgers have been managing their bullpen, the way that some of their relievers just simply have underperformed so far. They need Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. They might both pitch in a potential Game 6. May might be available out of the bullpen over these next 3 days. So they need those guys to figure it out. And it's weird because I see them pitch and I watch, I mean, Dustin May especially, his stuff is unbelievable. And I always wonder, like, how do people hit this guy? But it just hasn't come together for him.
Well, you know, the thing is, Alden, it's not just that they're hitting him. It's that they are scalding the baseball against him. I mean, that's what I'm concerned about more than anything else. These aren't bloop singles. I mean, even the outs are hard hit. That's why, I mean, I don't want to see him again in a high leverage situation in this series. I just don't think we can take that risk.
It's hard, though, because all of their pitchers have sort of had their moments in high leverage where they haven't really performed. I mean, Blake Treinen, who was great all year, has had moments like that. Joe Kelly has had moments like that. Brusdar Graterol, even, who's probably their most trusted reliever right now, has had those moments. I mean, Jake McGee was a revelation for them this year. And, you know, he's had some appearances where he's been hit around. So every given night, it seems like just sort of the list of like truly trusted high leverage relievers in Dave Roberts' bullpen either shrinks or it changes. You know, sometimes it's Pedro Bryant, sometimes it's not. And obviously the Kenley Jansen thing is a whole other situation in itself. So that's why I say, like, yeah, I mean, it's easy to say I don't trust Dustin May and I don't want him in high leverage. But you go down the list and there are a lot of guys who have not succeeded in high leverage. So eventually, I think Dustin May is going to be pitching in high leverage. I don't know what that situation is going to be, but they got to keep running them out there because there aren't a ton of guys who have been lights out for them in that bullpen this month.
And I, you know, if you think about it too, it's a situation I think tonight where Alden, I'm looking at the lineup. I see Austin Barnes in there. I understand why they're doing it. The pitchers are more comfortable with Barnes behind the plate and they're DHing Will Smith. But what do you think of that move? You know, I would say they're giving up a heck of a lot of offense by leaving Kike or Pollock on the bench, but hasn't Barnes been okay offensively in these playoffs?
I don't know the numbers. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I do know that whatever the numbers are, they'd be a really small sample size anyway. So it's not as if I would put much weight to them. I will tell you that Austin Barnes has been better about getting on base this season. Okay. He's had a much higher he made significant improvements with his on-base percentage and controlling the strike zone this year. But like you said, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, they're definitely making a sacrifice offensively, and it's all geared toward Walker's relationship with Austin Barnes, the way they work together. And also, Austin Barnes is an elite pitch framer. It's something that Dave Roberts talked about during the off day yesterday, that that's just a skill that he has that's, you know, superior to most catchers in baseball, but also superior to Will Smith. But, you know, it's interesting with having the catcher at DH. I would suspect that late in this game, especially when Walker Buehler is out of the game, you're going to see Will Smith move from DH to catcher, and then they'll just continually pinch hit at DH. They'll have Jock Peterson off the bench. They'll have Edwin Rios off the bench if they're facing right-handers. If they need a right-handed bat, they got A.J. Pollock. They got Kike Hernandez. I would suspect that Austin Barnes catching is like first 4 or 5 innings. And then later on in the game, they got enough on their bench, especially with the expanded rosters, that they could continually pinch hit at that DH spot.
Hey, Alden, you mentioned Kenley Jansen, and I've been telling John, I think he rediscovered something in his last appearance. Oh, he was back to low 90s with the cutter. he looked good. I am of the belief that Dave Roberts will go to him in the right situation tonight, in a save situation. What do you think?
Yes, I do.
What? No, don't Alden. God, you're killing me.
I know a lot of people might not want to hear that. I'm not saying that he is back to being like their full-fledged closer, because I don't think the Dodgers have one right now. And I believe Dave Roberts when he says that. And to be honest, I don't know if he'll go to him in a save situation, but I really do think that Dave Roberts will be saving Kenley Jansen for a high leverage situation when they have a lead, whether it's in the 9th or the 8th or the 10th or whenever that is. But I think the important thing here is that Kenley Jansen is back to being one of those trusted high leverage guys. And whether he found something or not, I mean, he's looked good his last couple appearances. But the thing that's been tough with Kenley Jansen that makes it so difficult to gauge is that he's really struggled with getting his upper body and his lower body synced up in his delivery. And so he's a big dude, and for some reason it just like wavers on him even more so these last couple of years. And when he's not right, when he's not fully synced up, it really affects his cutter. And so, like, I don't know going into an appearance how well synced up he's going to be. Because when he is synced up, you see those 91-mile-per-hour cutters with action. And when he's not, they're flat. He gets hit around, and it changes the Kenley Jansen experience. So, you know, he talked a few days ago about how he sort of simplified things. He spoke to Charlie Huff and Rick Honeycutt about getting back to basics. And he liked where he was at. But the key, and something that he readily admits, is it's maintaining that. And that's the stuff that makes it so difficult for Kenley and in terms of projecting him.
Well, listen, Alden, we appreciate you coming on. I know you're incredibly busy at this time of year. Do you think the Dodgers win the series still?
I'm always going to lean on talent winning out. I picked them to win the World Series this year. I probably picked them last year too. You know, it's a best of 5 series right now. I'll lean on talent all the time, but the Rays are really good and they're going to be a tough out.
Okay. Hey, Alden, thank you very much for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Take care.
All right. There's Alden Gonzalez from ESPN. And there you go, John. Kenley Jansen, high leverage situation. It's coming. It's going to happen.
Openly rooting against this.
Take your blood pressure pills. If your blood pressure goes up,
yeah, no kidding. All right, so you're leaving now, right? You're heading over there?
Yeah, I'm going to walk over to the park right now, and you guys are going to do some crosstalk.
All right, so Mace.
Yo.
The next time I talk to you, the Dodgers are going to be world champions.
Yes. Let's win the weekend.
Let's win the weekend.
Cake for everybody.
By the way, if it goes the other way, if the Rays win all 3 games this weekend, don't come back.
I won't.
Sorry. Just take the rest of the month off.
John, I'll walk back. How about that?
No, don't say that. I said that once.
Somebody
do not say that. He's kidding. He's totally kidding.
I'm totally kidding. I would not walk back.
Okay.
I would not make it. All right. Well, I'm out of here, John. You and George and LZ going to go at it next?
Yes, sir. Looking for it. Good luck. Bring home some wins, would you please?
Gonna do it. Bring it home, the world championship.
All right. Crosstalk with LZ and Sedano next, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
It is Purgatory, and it's another hour of power today for Sedano and LZ as they lead you right into the World Series. George and LZ joining us now. LZ, let me start with you because you're the biggest Dodger fan that's on the line right now. If it's a one-run game,
mm-hmm.
and yes, the Dodgers have the lead. I don't want to see him. He makes my blood pressure go up.
I knew where you were going.
I don't, LZ, just bringing him in makes me nervous. Why do you want to see him?
You know why I knew you were going to ask that question, John? Because you're listening to KSP in Los Angeles.
Oh, a little
very early.
Yeah,
a little early. It's got to be within. Yeah, it's an early penalty.
Yeah, it's got to be within 30 seconds of the 4 o'clock.
But you can reapply when we get to 3:59.
The earliest we can do
poll tax.
Yeah, there's a rule. Yeah, the earliest you go is 59:30. Anything after that is fair game.
I thought it was 59:45. But anyway, LZ, answer the because then you go 15 seconds either way. But. But LZ, answer the question. Like, if here's my argument: if Gratterall or Joe Kelly or who's ever in the game is doing good in the eighth inning, if they don't hit any speed bumps, why not bring them in to finish the game in the ninth rather than go to the great unknown, Kenley Jansen?
Well, first of all, they're all unknown, John. You're acting as you're acting as if the other pitchers have been lights out. They haven't been. They've been up and
down. Yeah, but the only one
too.
Who makes my blood pressure go up on sight is Kenley. Why is that?
Well, that's because you have, you know, history, right? And your history with Kenley is much longer than with the other pitchers, but that doesn't negate the fact that they all have been inconsistent at times, and I think it is up to Dave Roberts to look at who's in the seventh or in the eighth and see if they can still go the way he did with you know, Urias did, right?
Right.
But the question of the matter is if you're not sure how good your reliever has been in the eighth, why are you being hesitant with Kenley in the ninth when you've gone to him multiple times in recent history this postseason? One was a one-run game, and he came through for you brilliantly.
Because for every time you say he came through for you brilliantly, I could name a time where he didn't. I mean, it's literally flipping a coin.
He isn't as consistent as he once was. I think it's fair to say
He's not as consistent as he once was, but the names that Ireland just gave me aren't consistent ever. So what do you want, once was or ever?
Here's my argument, that if the guy pitching the eighth has no issues, okay, in other words, doesn't let anybody on base, you saw it in Game 7 in the NLCS. Urias didn't let anybody on base, and they went to him in the ninth. Earlier in the year, or certainly last year, they would have gone to Kenley. I don't want to see him go to Kenley unless there's a need. I mean, if they've tried some other guys first and they're not getting it done, I have no problem with going to him. I'm just saying he's not the first call. Do you disagree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the first call is on Dave to look at who's pitching in the eighth and to make a decision. And if he decides to go with Kenley in the ninth, I don't think anyone has any true empirical data based upon this year to say, oh, you should have gone with Joe Kelly or, oh, you should have gone with Gratterall, because both of those guys have been inconsistent too.
George, they elected tonight to go to Austin Barnes to catch because he's so good behind the plate with Buehler. But the story the other night was that the Dodgers didn't have a hit for the first three innings. They need some offense. Barnes is not your best offensive option. What do you think of the idea of going for a catcher, basically for defensive reasons, and giving up a stick by starting Austin Barnes?
Well, here's why. What I would say is that you're listening to KSBN Los Angeles.
There you go. Okay.
And then what I would then say is I think because the roof will be closed today, John, I think we're in for a pitcher's duel. You know, that park, clearly we've seen when that roof is open, the ball travels. And I don't think you're going to have as much of that today. I think that that you're going to find yourself in a situation because of the pitcher's duel that you want to get the most out of your starter. And I think they also want to kind of give the bullpen some, I don't want to say rest, but just give them a little boost by not using them as frequently as you have, right? And that's why you have a guy like Walker Buehler as your ace, because you think in theory he can give you at least six innings, right? So if he goes six and then, you know, you can slot three guys after that, then you're good to go. So I think it's that. I just think that they feel this game, because they're facing Morton, who's got a, by the way, Morton's got a 0.57 ERA in three starts in the really postseason this year. It's incredible. So I think because Dave believes that this may be a pitcher's duel, he wants his best signal caller back there.
And LZ, would you do it that way? Would you go with Barnes?
I was going to say, there's also the thing that, you know, we have two MVPs on this team. We have the franchise's all-time leader in RBIs in the postseason on this team. Like, why are we looking at Austin Barnes going, oh, I don't know. No, the other guys need to do their jobs. Like, why are we looking at Austin Barnes ahead of time and saying, well, if you don't get a hit, you might be the reason why we lose? No, trust. Trust.
He's probably the last guy you should be counting on.
Exactly.
For hits anyway.
If you're at that point, that means that we've had some issues long before you get to him in the ninth spot.
All right, so baseball in 2020 is you don't steal, you don't hit and run, you don't bunt. Because of all the things, George, you just laid out, that it's likely to be a pitcher's duel, that runs will be at a premium, would you be more, well, I guess my question would you be surprised if Mookie Betts gets on tonight, if they do what they did in game one, and try and move him around with steals, hit and runs, however they can get him home?
No, I would encourage that tonight, because I do think it's going to be a run could win this whole thing tonight. So, yeah, I think that you have a guy like that. He has certainly been playing that style anyway. So you should continue to do that. Even at the worst case, John, he's a decoy, right? Like, you at least get the pitcher thinking. That was the one thing about steals. Like, I understand that the risk isn't worth the reward. I get the math behind it. But I think that just having someone out there who is at least willing to be a threat, and being a threat doesn't mean he has to take the base every time. Just someone who is good enough to take a long enough lead to make the pitcher think he may go, I think that part of the strategy has been missing, and I think he brings that to the table.
LZ, would you mind if the Dodgers tried to do some non-traditional things tonight in order to maybe steal a run?
I am a big believer in manufacturing runs, and I think it's not just Mookie. I think that, you know, Bellinger's a threat because of his speed. You know, Kike's not starting, but if he comes in, keep your eyes open on him. We have, I wouldn't say a roster full of speedsters, but we certainly have more than one guy who can get a crucial steal for us. And so Dave would be wise to throw everything at this team, because while we may have the luxury of having everyone lined up the way we want to from a pitching perspective, that doesn't mean our offense is going to be there for us. And we may need to manufacture some runs, and so I'm open to that for sure.
Okay. Changing subjects, guys. It leaked out today that it's now certainly possible and maybe even likely that the NBA is going to start a couple of days before Christmas. They think that they can get back on their regular calendar, mm-hmm. and they think that they can play more games this way, frankly, and keep the game spread out. George, you think it's going to happen?
I do think it seems likely that that'll be the case. And I think it makes sense in this regard, okay? You own the whole week leading up to Christmas, basically, because your opening night will be December 22nd, which is a Tuesday, which is traditional. It's been on a Tuesday for a long time. So you have Tuesday, right? Tuesday is on TNT. You get two games, right? You'll get the Lakers and somebody, and you'll get, you know, somebody on the East Coast. And then Wednesday, you'll have an ESPN pair of games. And then Thursday, you're back to TNT. And then Friday is Christmas. So you'll have the five games between ESPN and ABC, and you get to own all those days in a row, like four straight days of just NBA in your face, while people in theory should be home during the holidays.
LZ, if you're Michelle Roberts or Chris Paul, the people that head the players union, are you pushing for this or against it?
Well, I think financially, when you look at the $500 million difference that's being reported in terms of starting earlier versus later, and the hit that this league has taken at the very beginning of the season before the pandemic because of what happened with China and Daryl Morey, I think you have no choice but to try to maximize the restart as much as you can financially. But I would say selfishly, John, and George and I were talking about this not too long ago, my first thought is how unfair this is to the Lakers.
Because they have to turn around so quickly.
Your reward for having a 35-year-old do things he's not supposed to be doing at this stage of his career is to have him take a nap and then get up and do it all over again. Not a rest. This is a nap. So I you know, selfishly, I think it's unfair, you know, certainly to the final four teams that played in the bubble.
Yeah.
But to the Lakers specifically, with LeBron as our leader, it just doesn't seem right. But I understand why they need to do it because of what happened financially.
Well, clearly they want to get it back going because Paul George is busy complaining about his NBA 2K rating. So they figure might as well just get him out on the court if that's the case.
Why does he keep doing trash things?
Yeah, I he's for him to complain player, about anything at this point but he's so hard to believe.
He's so trash adjacent. He's not a trash man. He's not a trash player. But he constantly does trash things.
Yeah, and you know, there's some rumors out there that they might even move him. We'll see. George, what are you hearing in terms of how they're going to execute it? Are they still looking at bubbles? Are they considering?
Look, I think the regional bubble thing is a possibility. I think the one thing Adam has shown, right, Adam Silver, is that he's willing to be nimble, right, and pivot when he needs to. And so I think that my guess, and this is just purely speculation, so if you're an aggregator out there, don't aggregate me. It is reckless speculation on my part. My guess is they will probably try to start regionalizing the schedule, okay? And perhaps even, you know, concentrate travel. And what I mean by that is this. Let's say they want to play Heat Lakers in the first game on December 22nd to just have the finals teams in the same matchup again, and they'll do it at Staples Center, right?
Right.
What they'll do is they'll make the Heat play kind of a West Coast swing, basically. And they'll play the Lakers and Clippers, and maybe they'll sneak in like a third team,
Warriors.
Like the Kings or the Warriors, right? And then get them out of California, have them go back home, have a couple days off, and then get back to whatever they're going to do. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that'll be the way they do it. When the Lakers go east, if they play...
Put them in Brooklyn, put them in Boston.
Brooklyn, New York, and like Boston, or Brooklyn, New York, Philly. Right. Like, they'll play those games like that in clusters. And I think that's the way they'll do it, and hope that that works better. Because I don't think the players want to play a bubble unless it's absolutely necessary, even a regional bubble.
By the way, guys, breaking news just being reported while we were talking. Adam Schefter says Antonio Brown and the Buccaneers have reached an agreement on a one-year deal. Language still to be finalized. COVID protocols have been passed, but Brown is likely to make his Bucs debut in week 9 against the Saints.
2 weeks, right. Yeah.
LZ, good move or bad move for Tampa Bay to bring in Antonio Brown?
Great move. It's a great move. You know, he probably can walk right off the street, right onto a field, and still easily be one of the top 5 receivers in the league. So I understand that he's got a lot of, you know, stuff that comes with him. But the NFL is full of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Full of stuff.
Amen to that.
So it's not as if, you know, we can look at Antonio Brown and go, how could you?
Yeah.
And, you know, George, to me, this says Tampa Bay is – full going for it. Like,
oh,
they think
yeah.
they think right now that,
I mean,
they,
you don't
are,
bring it Brady if you're not full in all in for
but,
it.
But now look at it. They went out and you know, went all in on running back when they got Leonard Fournette. Now
and
you're looking
hurt.
At right. Well, he's coming back this week, but he's coming back against the Raiders, but he's missed the last 2 weeks. But now, if you're a defensive coordinator, they could, you know, they have all pro tight ends, including Gronk.
Yeah.
And if you
Godwin,
want to take the tight end off the field, Godwin, Evans, and Antonio Brown, who do you double cover?
You don't. You don't have anyone double cover. And you have an excellent offensive mind as far as their coach is concerned, and Bruce Arians. So, yeah, look, Brady had the guy staying in his house when he was in New England. So this isn't that big a surprise. I do think the Rams did escape something here a little bit because they, you know, LZ and I were talking about this before the show too, which was that – you know, I mean, he was supposed to go to Seattle. That was what I thought was going to happen. At least that was the scuttlebutt just, I don't know, this morning, really. So Russell Wilson was trying to make sure that he became a Seattle Seahawk. So, you know, Tom Brady got this done, and I actually think the Rams they get lucky here in regards to the fact that Antonio Brown won't be in the division.
I also would add this caveat. How many Super Bowls has Antonio Brown won?
I think was he on that last Steelers team that won?
I can't remember.
I do believe it's zero.
Yeah, I think that happened right. I think he came on. He might have come after right after Ben. That was Ben's rookie year, right?
No, Ben's won two.
Ben's won two.
That's right. The one Ben won in Arizona against Arizona.
I guess my point being is that at one point.
Oh, that was Antonio Holmes, not Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
You're right.
At one point, the Pittsburgh Steelers had three of the most talented offensive players on one team that defenses had to figure out how to match up against. And obviously, it worked out for the defenses because that trilogy never won.
Right.
So just because, you know, AB is going down with Tom Brady, that's a tougher team on paper for sure. But if you can get pressure on Tom Brady, it doesn't really matter how fast AB is.
Yeah, that is a good point. I think that Brady clearly is not the same player that he once was. And again, even a minimal drop in these type of sports at this level can be significant. I mean, he's not Drew Brees, because Drew Brees looks like he's this close to being washed, right? And the other part about Drew Brees that is different is that he's already basically announced his next thing, you know, which is always weird to me when a guy does that. When he says, oh, I'm going into broadcasting, he's going to go work for NBC. It almost feels like his heart isn't 100% into it. We haven't heard that from Brady at all. So I think that Brady is still better than Brees. Like, he's not Tom Brady of 3 or 4 years ago, but I still think he's good enough. But to LZ's point, I think that just that half step that may hurt him may end up hurting the team.
All right, guys, I know you got a little less than an hour to lead up to the World Series. That's coming up next.
45 minutes of power. Yeah.